This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
Art Deco architecture, museums, even dining. Can you guess where we're going? Would you be surprised if we said Miami Beach? Your solo travel advisor knows Miami Beach and is prepared to take you off the beaten path. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien. A land of glorious vacation dreams, Astrid Clements will give you the peaks, the must-dos of an exciting solo travel destination, Miami Beach, Florida.
Miami Beach, I have to just share with the listeners before we get in this episode, is really one of my all-time favorite places to go to. Probably one of the reasons why I have such a dear love for Miami Beach is it was actually the first place that I traveled to as a young child away from my hometown. I'll never forget my father came. He says, "Oh, well, we're going to go to the beach for Easter." And he said, "We're going to go to Miami Beach." And I thought, Miami Beach, I do know that that's in Florida. I mean, you know, I was only 9 years old. So I remember this trip so well because we stayed at the fabulous Fountain Blue Hotel. Mm. I mean, it just completely, this vacation completely blew my mind, first of all, because everything I saw was glamour, and more glamour. The balmy breezes off of the Atlantic, fabulous hotel, just, you know, just the whole feel of Miami Beach for a young girl. It was like I didn't know another world like this existed. So it has a special place in my heart because it really did. It opened my eyes to there was a world outside of my hometown in Louisiana. So I love Miami Beach, and it still has that wonderful, special vibe. So in this particular episode, we'll be going over just classic Miami Beach and then some things that, you know, people don't think about doing that I do suggest if you go more than once or twice, start to delve down into culture of Miami Beach, the history of Miami Beach. It has a unique evolution.
Listeners, don't make the mortifying mistake that I made. Miami and Miami Beach are two totally different places.
Oh, yeah. Miami, the city of Miami, is big city, financial district, lots of high-rise office buildings, in condos, in neighborhoods, etc. You cross the beach to Miami Beach. In Miami Beach, like Key Biscayne, Fisher Island, is a complete island, but it's a long, narrow island, similar to Long Island, and it is not Miami. So we're talking about Miami Beach.
Okay.
All right, so I've traveled here so many times, probably at least 15 times in my lifetime, maybe more, and 10 times or 8 times in the last 10 years. And I talk about this a lot on when I get down to the culture and, you know, really learning about a particular destination. And to me, one of the great things about solo travel is you're free to do what you want to do. You don't have to have any compromises with what other people want to do or what they're interested in. And so one of my great loves is really to delve deep into the culture. And, you know, I love to explore. I like to do the must-dos. I like to do the things that, you know, are a little bit unusual, as well as I like to kind of try to get to know the people that live there, the local customs, and how to sample how the locals live. So when I leave, I really have a wonderful fabric of a lot of different memories. And this brings me great joy when I travel. And it's one of the reasons why I think all of this has evolved with my focus on sharing solo travel, etc. Okay, I would say probably everybody who goes to Miami Beach, they go really for the beach because the beach is beautiful. And going to Miami Beach is, you know, the moniker for Miami Beach really is the American Riviera. And this is a place where there are beautiful people, beautiful beaches, and I mean, it is like Shangri-La. So most people who come to Miami Beach want to have a luxurious beach experience. And really, this is what Miami Beach is known for. The hotels are, there's probably more luxury hotels on a beach in Miami Beach than anywhere in the United States. So you have got so many options and even price points with five-star luxury hotels. And these hotels are geared to beach activities as well as to, you know, everything else that they try to make themselves distinctive for. So if you want that relaxing on a padded lounger with a, you know, under an umbrella with drinks being served, spraying your face, you know, giving you tanning supplies, you know, a beach activity, ski runners, anything. You know, you can be, all I always think about is I just want to fall asleep listening to the waves come in. Mm. And if you do it in Miami Beach, you, I mean, it is like ritzy, you know, and you don't get that in like a lot of different beaches. But Miami Beach, you get that. I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of like what you see on TV, but it's really there. So lots of these fabulous luxury hotels that you can experience the beach right there on their premise. But they also have some other beaches that are public beaches that people who live there, as well as people who Airbnb it or whatever, that are not directly on the beach can enjoy themselves. The first one is Loomis Park, and it is the most popular one. It's right in the middle of South Beach between 6th and 14th Street. They've got off on the other side of the park, you know, the Colony Hotel and lots of restaurants and cafes and that kind of thing. So, and they have volleyball in the park, and there's a lot of things going on besides just the sea and the sand. But they have that there, and they have the beach chairs and the umbrellas and all of that. So Loomis Park is very good, and it's free, except if you want to rent stuff. Then they have two other unique beaches that I need to mention. First of all, they have at 12th Street an LBGT beach, which is very popular in Miami Beach. This is the kind of beach that you're interested in. This is a great beach. Likewise, very popular. Then a unique beach that is in Miami is called, and I've never been there, Holover Beach. It's 99 acres, and it is one of the world's largest clothing optional beaches. It's really supposed to be one of the best in the world. And it also actually has tennis courts and golf facilities. So, you know, if you are clothing optional, if you like that, this is one of the best beaches for that, definitely in the United States, but in the world. So I just wanted to mention that.
Yes.
I actually did go to their site to read about it because I didn't know it was there. And they have all kinds of, you know, different tips on, I want to say do's and don'ts. And
maybe etiquette.
Yeah, and what to expect and that kind of thing. And maybe you want to try that out.
Interesting.
Okay, but basically, some beach time really should always be on your agenda when you come to Miami Beach because it's the American Riviera and it's one of the main things Miami Beach is noted for. But you wanted to also know about what's non-beach activities. Well, you know, I'm going to go into a lot of things that I guess people never knew was there, and that is one of the big focuses of this show. So before I get into that, you know, some of the reason why Miami has this glitzy international kind of cosmopolitan beach tropical vibe and persona is, you know, it's not just a regular beach. You know, there are beaches where it stays kind of rustic, and there are beaches where, I mean, it's so different from like Cape Cod or Kennebunkport or, you know, even some of the resort beaches. I mean, this is like, it's got a lot more upscale to it and a lot more culture that is focused, or it has a cultural underpinning to Miami Beach. And this didn't just spring up, this evolved. And some of the reason why it's here is because of the history of how it evolved and who actually came down here. You know, the beaches of Florida were kind of built or begun to be developed by these big developers, Flagler and who was the big railroad baron, but they were constantly putting these new railroad spurs that went further and further down the coast. Well, Miami Beach ended up being a destination for a large, well, a lot of wealthy northerners would come and live down here part-time, but specifically for a very large number of the Jewish population. They loved Miami Beach. So they would come down here all the time to get to escape the winters. And in many, many of the Jewish population in the history of the United States, they've been very successful business-wise and have become wealthy. So with this large amount of Jewish part-time residents, they brought a lot of money into this area. And with that, they demanded a certain level of shopping, and they were into architecture and all this. And so that started Miami Beach as being like an upscale kind of area, exclusive in developing a culture. Then you also had a lot of the early American mob would also come here, and they had some of their rum running and gun running and everything that took place on the island across the bridge from Miami. So it also was a place where moneyed criminals came, or certain types. And it obviously flourished there. For some reason, it did. And they come and enjoy the high life while they were, you know, making a lot of, you know, black market money or whatever. Then on top of that, you had your ties to Cuba and this Cuban and Spanish influence that has developed more and more of South America. Now it goes into the Miami port and everything, but Cuba specifically. And also they had the mob ties a little bit to that with the gambling and a lot of the entertainment and that kind of thing. So it started to make this a melting pot of moneyed, smart kind of people that, you know, like glamour and the finer things, etc. So that kind of set the whole DNA, I guess you would say, of Miami Beach. With this, it brought in a lot of real estate development and a lot of money for real estate development. So cutting-edge architecture. And at that time, Art Deco was the most elegant style, the most modern and sophisticated. So they had a lot of that. And it worked well with the climate because you could do things with Art Deco and the stucco and everything that worked with the climate and was also, you know, real architecturally new and wonderful. So the architecture, to begin with, was distinctive. Lavish hotels. I mean, this was the first place where they really had lavish hotels. I mean, when the Fountain Blue Hotel was opened up, it was really the most fabulous hotel in the world. 1,000 rooms in this kind of S-shaped building that this extremely famous architect by the name of Milton, I think his first name is Milton, but Lapidus. This hotel, I mean, marble floors all in the huge lobby with little black bow ties instead of, you know, the typical diamond shape that they put on white marble or whatever to, you know, that you see in Europe. He put black bow ties. I mean, this hotel was so like, oh, at that time. And like I said, that's where I stayed when I was 9 years old. And oh my God, this is living. But so lavish hotels, best shopping. You know, these people with money, they, and especially the ladies, they wanted to look real pretty and they like to shop. Great restaurants. So, you know, this really, from the very beginning, established that Miami Beach was going to be the best American playground, basically, for, you know, adult Americans. I mean, Las Vegas started kind of around the same time, but it didn't have the beach. So when you travel to Miami Beach, I highly recommend that you do take some time away from the beach to explore interesting things about its history and its culture. So some of the great options are, number one, they have some really cool architectural tours that are either by, they're sponsored by the historical district. Like they actually have now a Art Deco Historical District. And I'm going to go into a little bit of this because it's, you know, I've done the tour and I've actually done two tours of the Art Deco architecture in Miami Beach. And it's fascinating. When you see what all the different details are that they do on the buildings, from the eyebrows to the stone fountains motifs and the different things that they employed to make this architectural symbolic and modern and really sophisticated. You don't know it if you don't know the background of it very much. You can see certain things and you can identify, oh, that's Art Deco. But you don't know the elements that have gone into it to make it Art Deco and what is functional and what is for decorative detail. The architectural tours are great. There's over 600 architectural landmarks. Like I said, there's a historic Art Deco district now. There's actually an Art Deco museum that is there, and you know, you've got daily tours that you can take. Then also, many of these palace hotels, I still call them palaces because that's what I thought when I was nine, and they still are, that have that feel. You walk into these humongous sweeping lobbies, and they didn't do, I mean, now we're used to seeing that, you know, in hotels around the world, but that was like so cutting edge because it took a lot of architectural and engineering mathematics and everything to make that, to keep that weight span, and then to make all this, put all this, you know, these beautiful gold mosaic tiles and just make it real, like, whoo, out of this world. Well, these hotels like the Fountain Blue, the Delano, the Eden Rock, they were fabulous then. They're still fabulous. So, you know, that in itself, once you, when you come to Miami Beach and you stay in one of those hotels, And they don't have a lot of, and this is another thing, and I might say this more than once in this episode, they don't have a lot of the high-rise brand-new hotels there. And this is on purpose. Just like in the French Quarter and in New Orleans, in Paris, they had specific design details and restrictions and requirements, and it kept the feel of something that was authentic. And that is what is another thing that makes Miami Beach so wonderful, because you go to Miami and it's all high rise. You go down the beach, Aventura and all that, you get all the new high rises. But in Miami Beach specifically, oh no, not that much of it, and especially in these areas where the historic district is. And you, yeah, it's great. So, okay, and then you've got the museums. You've got the Wolfsonian Museum, which this, my last trip, which was about 2 months ago, I finally got to the Wolfsonian Museum. I had wanted to do it several other times, but this time I got to do it. But it's a very interesting museum where its mission is to illustrate the pervasive power of art and design and technological changes that have transformed our world. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about this museum also later in the episode. But this was kind of in conjunction with this Art Deco period. And you will go into this museum and you'll see a lot of artifacts from that era, because this was an era too where Industrial Revolution was going on. I mean, Art Deco kind of hatched out of the expo in Paris in the late 1800s, I think. And, you know, Eiffel Tower was really part of that, the big cutting edge of it. But then how it morphed into other areas, whether it was in other places in Europe or the United States. Well, this museum has a lot of different things from all over the world that kind of happened in that time, whether it's art or something that functions, and how it was detailed artistically or created, from color to type of handles to function. I mean, you know, you don't think of these things unless you go into a museum, and then you start to connect the dots. And then your travels and what you're experiencing become much more vivid and deep and meaningful, and you appreciate too what's there a lot more. Okay, another museum, two of them I haven't been to, and then I'm going to talk about a great gallery, is the Bass Museum. It has a wonderful domestic and international art collection, and it goes from about the Renaissance to modern art. So if you love art, in Miami and Miami Beach really are becoming more and more of a place of art, with the Miami Design District and Art Basel in Miami. And just, you know, Miami and Miami Beach is a place of moneyed wealth, whether it's internationally or domestically. So with that comes art. And so this museum is donation, probably from the Bass family, but it's supposed to be a nice museum. Another unique place to go in Miami Beach is the World Erotic Art Museum. Now, this museum, and I haven't been there yet. I don't know if I'll go, but I might. You never know. It houses historical artifacts of ancient sexual practices and information and art about sex in the different cultures of the world. Now, I mean, you know, a lot of people or some people would never go into there and wouldn't be interested. But sex through the different eras, you know, had different meanings, different mores, practices. And I think it's interesting to have it in the United States, because they always talk about the U.S. We're still kind of Puritan. I mean, even though we've got all kinds of garbage now, excuse me, on the television and in the internet. But, you know, in other cultures, there was much more, I guess you would say romance. Not totally. Romance isn't exactly the same. It isn't what I should say. I mean, romance plays a part in it, but there is a sophistication and an elegance in a part of the human psyche in everything that to me is high-minded in different kinds of ways. And I think this is what this museum depicts.
I see.
You know, I mean, there's the more erotic side, but there are the other sides to it and how it played into, I'm sure, politics, social fabric, blah, blah, blah. But there's all genuine artwork in this by famous artists. It's not just funky stuff. Mm. You know what I'm saying? It has 20 rooms from pre-Columbian, Roman, Middle Ages, all kinds of stuff. Hmm. So I think it's probably very interesting, but you just have to be in the right mindset when you go in there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you might not feel like dealing with it. or you know, you don't want to do that today. But you might find it something that is fascinating to you.
I guess I'm a tiny bit surprised by the sort of like emerging theme here, but I guess if you have the beach and you have all the beautiful people.
Well, supposedly, I think the story is about this museum is a woman actually has developed it. And she had started collecting erotic art in her travels. And I don't know if she passed away. Well, I don't know what happened, but I think she wanted to give some to her son, and I don't know, he might not have wanted it. So she decided she just didn't want to throw all this away, or it was something. And so I think the story is she came up with the idea, and it actually, you know, it's popular.
Yeah.
But like I said, you have to be wanting to go see something like this and be ready to explore this kind of topic. But I might do it. I really might do it just because, you know, when you're an adult, I mean. Okay, well, the next artistic thing or a place that I think is really, it's a really almost a must do when you go to Miami Beach is the Brito Gallery. Now, this gallery showcases the famous Brazilian artist Romero Brito. And Romero Brito, I mean, he is a rags to riches kind of story. I mean, he was a poor child from Brazil that did end up immigrating to the United States. And really, his art is what has propelled his life. And this wonderful gallery is on Lincoln Road. And I'll talk to more about Lincoln Road later. And then he has a gallery, too, in the airport, actually, that's really good. But you can see his paintings, his sculpture, his prints. Oh, they have suitcases made out of it, totes, purses, of travel accessories, jewelry. I mean, he sells everything with his art on it. And his art, I know that most people have seen it because it's very happy art. Mm. His themes are happiness and optimism. It's just, when you see it, it's happy, you know. But it has a street art quality to it. So I know most people who travel have seen some Brito suitcases because you'll just notice it. It's got all these colors and it's outlined in black. This pop artist is very famous now. And the price ranges are all levels in there. So if you like his things, I mean, you should go in, first of all, just to experience it. But secondly, if you want something, there is all price ranges. You could buy a pencil with, with his little designs on it. So, okay, so that's the kind of the artistic stuff that, you know, is not beach-oriented, that has got depth to it. entertainment and nightlife. Now, this stems back to, you know, the Cubans and the shows at night, and also the mob, and then even
the adult playground.
Yeah. So they have still lots of bars and clubs and entertainment venues that you can do. So, you know, I'm just going to name a few. And, I mean, I'm naming the ones that, you know, I think a solo female traveler, if she's comfortable to do these kinds of things, would be comfortable in. You know, some people love to do it, and some just don't want to do it, okay? So I'm going to start with a venue in the Fountain Blue Hotel. So if you stay at the Fountain Blue Hotel, you don't have to leave your hotel. You can stick your toe in this place. And if you don't feel uncomfortable, well, you can go back outside and, you know, sit on the beach or wherever you are. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's so many things to do at the Fountain Blue Hotel. But they also have a fabulous entertainment venue, and it's called Live or Live, L-I-V. And, you know, I mean, this is a place where the beautiful people go, and lots of stars go there. Many times it's strictly dancing with DJs, but you also have performers that come, and, you know, there's concerts, and you know, usually the night ends up one big party in Live. So, you know, if that's what you really want to experience and you don't want to go to an outside club, stay in the Fountain Blue and go to Live. It's pretty high class. Then you've got a place called Purdy's Lounge. Now, this is really kind of like a Miami, you know, Caribbean place, low-key dance club, DJ. You know, they have, like I said, Caribbean music. They have old school hip-hop. They even have a drunken spelling bee that you can participate in. Who's the best speller when they're drunk? So this is, like I said, this is really kind of, you know, a more laid-back kind of place. Also, there's a place called the Cabaret South Beach. Now, this is more French style, really. This is, I would say, more, you know, boho chichi. Where they have singers, comedians, dancers, musicians. You know, they have all kinds of music, jazz, pop, ballet, Latin. It's got more of like a, like I said, a boho kind of French, you know, laissez-faire attitude. But I think it's quite cool. You know, it's part of that American Riviera, I guess, feel for the different types of entertainment that you can enjoy there. Then there's another place called Max Club Deuce. Now, this is one of the oldest bars in Miami, and it's considered like quirky. But they describe it as a dive with good vibes. And it's actually Anthony Bourdain's favorite. So, this place, you know, it's the oldest bar in Miami Beach, and it's still got it. So, but it's a special place. That's why I'm naming it. And then the last more is the Fillmore at the Jackie Gleason Theater. You know, you've got comedy there. You've got concerts there. You've got theater production. So you actually have real drama and theater and everything. Some other miscellaneous non-beach sites that I think are worth going to is, first of all, the Miami Beach Botanical Gardens. Now, you know, you don't think of Miami Beach as going to have a botanical garden, but it does. So if you love gardening, whether you live up north or wherever, this is it's worth going to see, because it's special. It's very different. Mm-hmm. In Miami Beach, they have actually a 40-block-long boardwalk. So you can walk along this boardwalk day or night. You don't have to walk in the sand. You can listen to the beach. It's beautiful under the starry nights. There's restaurants along the way. You can bike it if you want to. It's really nice. Mm. You know, it's only in a certain area. But it's by a lot of the really nice hotels, And it's a good connector, you know, along the beach. So that's quite nice to do, whether it's in the day or in the evening, early morning. Okay, next is your duck tours. Well, I did one, and it, you know, it's a duck tour, but it's you travel in an amphibious vehicle that goes land or sea. And I guess the thing that is, you know, they take you all through the Art Deco district and, you know, the different areas of what you should do in Miami. It's kind of like hop on, hop off, but you don't hop off. And then you get into the water. So they take you around Star Island and some of these other smaller islands, and they tell you who the rich and famous, they used to live there, now this person lives there, you know, how many millions and jillions of dollars that these houses are, and some of the folklore, I guess you'd say, of Miami Beach. So, you know, it's got its
that
merits.
That sounds fun, yeah.
Yeah, because you can't see these houses. You can't go into Star Island unless you are you know, let in. So it's got its place.
And why is it called Duck Tour?
Well, because you go in this monstrosity of looking vehicle that are these huge tires that look like a big boat with a canopy on it with wheels.
I see. Okay.
And it's got a duck painted on it, you know.
I see. Okay.
I mean, it looks like some kind of poorly designed military vehicle.
So we're not going for the stylish transportation. Okay.
And be forewarned, you can get a little wet.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay.
But I've done it, and I enjoyed it. Yeah. It was, you know. So, and then there's another kind of unique tour. It's called the Antique Car Tour. Now, I haven't done this because I have a convertible. But they do these tours in vintage American convertible cars. And it also hits the main sites like the Holocaust Memorial, Lincoln Road, Wolfsonian Museum, Espanola Way, Collins and Washington Avenues, Ocean Drive, Alton Way, South Point Park. These are the main kind of areas of Miami Beach. But you can't get off and on in these cars. You just drive down with the convertible down. And they just tell you what this is and why it's important and what you should do when you go back to these areas. So if you want to ride around in a convertible, you can do it within a tour. Okay, now again, talking about the Art Deco, walking tours. The official one is done by the Miami Design Preservation League. That is the one I really highly recommend it because all these docents are very well trained. In fact, we had one on a guest appearance. She was so wonderful. I mean, she opened up just the whole evolution in the elements of Art Deco to me. And I'm married to a retired architect. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it, whether it was in hotel buildings or post offices or restaurants, and what's the difference between Art Deco and MIMO, which is Miami Modern, yeah, and Mediterranean Revival. I mean, all these different little subtle differences. But once you see it, I mean, you can pick it out. So I highly recommend those. And it's every day, Monday through Saturday at 10:30, and Thursday evenings at 6:30. But I actually took mine on a Sunday, so they do offer it on Sundays too, because I was able to book it then.
And shout out to Alexandra Bassel. She was on our show, and she was really gave us so much information on the episode. But can you imagine going on a tour with her? It would be so fascinating.
Oh, she's fascinating. She's a second-generation resident of Miami Beach, and she loves Miami Beach. She's seen it when it was, you know, past its prime, and then how it's come back, and she has been part of that. Yeah. So she has a passion for it. And if you can take her tour, yeah, I would highly recommend it because she is, she's just as good as it gets when it comes to a tour guide. She's so delightful.
Yeah. I have a feeling that you mentioned this a little bit, Astrid. You kind of teased us. Shopping in Miami Beach.
Oh, shopping. Oh, my God. Well, I'm a shopaholic.
Wait a minute. This isn't the first time I'm hearing this.
I've confessed this every time we start talking about shopping. Maybe it'll help me,
recover.
restrain a little. I'm going to my Mexico City tomorrow, and I'm just drooling over all of those fabulous, fabric earrings, colorful, bracelets. I've got my list of 11 markets, but shopping in Miami Beach. Well, with money comes a lot of upscale shopping, okay? And really, the shopping in Miami Beach predominantly is like resort-oriented. And I find the better shops are really in the really upscale hotels. And then there's two shopping malls, pedestrian malls, which are very, very nice. But really, for the most part, it's resort-oriented. And I find that those best shopping venues are in these fabulous hotels because they have some really nice, like the Fountain Blue Hotel has several boutiques, and they're all just really wonderful. But there are two excellent shopping malls. One on Lincoln Road and one in Bal Harbour. And I'll start with Bal Harbour because it's the one that most people don't go to. Mm. Bal Harbour is probably... Now, the Miami Design District is also becoming this way, but this is a very small shopping center of only the top retail brands. Versace, Gucci, Hermes, Chanel, Valentino, Bulgari, Alexander McQueen. Only the top. You don't see any slightly less level. I mean, you drive up in the parking lot in the shops of Bal Harbour and you see Rolls Royces, Bentleys, Maseratis. What's Elon Musk's car?
Teslas.
I mean, Corvettes, Porsches. I mean, it's like, oh, gosh. Wow. Do people really have this kind of money? But they do. So this is where they shop. So I go there probably every other time that I go to Miami Beach because I love to keep up with the latest and see what the latest and the greatest and the most expensive is, just to know. I mean, every now and then I'll buy something, but I have to be so completely over the top, hooked and knocked out to let that kind of money go. Because I'm really basically a bargain shopper of high quality things, so you can't get it there. I mean, I've never seen a sale there. So, but it's a great place to go to just smell that air there and see that beautiful stuff. When I think of Bal Harbour, I think the women are beautiful and the men are handsome. You know, what else is there? Everything is Shangri-La. So it's great people watching, and they do have a really good Italian restaurant, and the name of it right now escapes me, but it's right there on the corner when you come in one of the main exits or entrances. And the food is delicious there, and I've eaten there several times, and it is great people watching because you will see, I mean, you might be sitting next to LeBron James. You don't know. I mean, there anybody can be. I mean, look, this is where they come. So that is really nice. Unless you don't like that, don't go. If you don't like that kind of stuff, don't go because you'll probably get a little, turned off by it, to tell you the truth, because it is really conspicuous consumption. But it's so concentrated right there in that way. I mean, you've got Rodeo Drive, Worth Avenue. You walk blocks and blocks on Madison Ave or 5th Avenue. But this is so concentrated with all of that. Oh, it's something else. Okay, and then you have Lincoln Road. Now, Lincoln Road was part of the original Miami Beach as it was developing. It was... it is basically all the buildings along Lincoln Road, and it's 1 mile. It's now a pedestrian mall. It wasn't at at first, but it's all Art Deco. And it in the middle, it has like Art Deco planters and sculptures out of concrete and different. So it's got a real vibe to itself in terms of its architecture. It is a delightful place to go because it has boutiques, it has big box stores like Zara and the good ones, you know, not super expensive, but, you know, think places that, you know, families, kids, teenagers, adults will go in. You know, it has makeover, you know, cosmetic boutiques, it has great restaurants. And also with the restaurants, there's so many of them that you can sit outside. They'll have the restaurant, and then kind of in the common area or along the common area are umbrellaed seating areas. In Miami, with those breezes and everything, and, you know, most of these restaurants are open until at least midnight at night. So it's really, really pleasant to sit out there and eat. And people watch, you can take your time, do some shopping. So I always gravitate to Lincoln Road during some of my time when I'm in Miami Beach. Because the things there are affordable, you know, and some of it's unique. They had this one purse place where you can make your own purse. Yeah, and design. Oh, yeah, they have all kinds of different things. And then they have like Laduri, macaroons, and, you know, the specialty items that, you know, you can't get in most places where you live unless you order it online. But you can get it here. Yeah. And it's in your price range. You can, you don't feel like, oh, I'm, you know, I've just blown my whole year's travel budget with this item.
I can't eat. Oh, no.
And, you know, so, and they also have like a farmer's market on Sunday, which they don't, you know, they not only sell produce and everything, but they sell crafts and that kind of thing. So that's fun. And entertainment, they have a like kind of like a square area where they'll do entertainment. And then periodically, I think it's once a month, they have the Lincoln Road Antiques Market. And it's kind of like a vintage thing. And it's supposed to be very popular. I've never been there when they had that, but I know it goes on.
You mentioned a little bit about food. Should people think food when it comes to Miami Beach?
Oh, my God. Now, with all of this glitz and glamour and these people were coming down to spend money, you know they're looking for good places to eat. And there's so many of them. I'm just going to hit on what I think are the best and some of the really highly rated venues that I have not gone to but I think are worth mentioning. The food there is, I mean, it like in anywhere where there's a discriminating clientele or there's a lot of money being spent, a restaurant will not survive if the food is not good. Now, they have some fast food places, but then they have a lot of other alternatives. And they're typically very good because, you know, this is an international tourist destination, so there's a lot of competition for really good food. Mm, so good. You got great restaurants.
Oh, good. Let's hear it.
Okay. I'm going to start with really one of the most fabulous restaurants I've ever been to in terms of setting. The food was excellent, too, but the setting, woo! It was at the Versace Mansion. And I have tried to eat at that restaurant 4 times. It's very hard to get a reservation. This last time, bingo, this solo traveler was able to get a reservation. And let me tell you, it is better than you think it is. This beautiful Mediterranean mansion, Versace, the famous clothing designer who was murdered right there on the steps, very sad situation. But he bought this mansion and renovated it. It's beautiful. You come in some gates and they've got like a little outdoor courtyard. Then you go in through like a little bit of a loge and come back out into another kind of rectangular courtyard that is I think it's three stories high. And this part of it now has been converted into a very boutique, high-class hotel. But this courtyard is just beautiful with this focal point fountain that's kind of lit up in a beautiful blue. The detail is gorgeous. So you can eat, you can have like light snacks and drinks in this larger courtyard. And it's very, very beautiful just to sit in there. Then you've got the option of eating a full meal in the bar, which the bar is more intimate and dressy casual. The whole place now is dressy casual. Before, I'm sure it was a little bit more dressy, like designer dressy. But, you know, you can kind of get away with certain things. But the bar is more of a relaxed area. And then the main dining area, which is the most fantastic, is the outside area, some of which is covered and some is not, around Versace's pool. And from the pool, he has fountains. And he did so much. What he added this section all on to the property. And he did a lot of mosaic work. And he did a lot of things that classical Italian architects would do in terms of frescoes. Like it reminded me, it had a Palladio kind of feel to it. Sitting outside around that pool and it is the most elegant setting for a meal. You cannot get any more elegant. And I've eaten in some of the best restaurants in the whole world. And I mean, you know, the interiors are different depending on the culture. But this one is a knock your socks off. So just to go there, and I mean, it's like going to a wonder of the world, really. It's so special. And the fact that he lived there, he did this, and then he had this tragic death. It's almost like paying homage to somebody that, golly, you know, like Princess Diana or something. You just didn't want them to leave so soon because they had such a passion for their mission in life, you know.
A vision too.
Yeah, and it's there for, you know, so I loved it, you know. And the food, like I said, was really good, but the setting is extraordinary. So that is a must do if you can make it happen.
If you can do it. Yeah,
it's hard. It's hard. And it is expensive. You have to know that ahead of time. But you're prepared for that. The next restaurant that I love, because I love Cuban food, but this one is quite nice, is called Havana 1957, and it's actually on Lincoln Road. It's not that old of a restaurant, but it's really good. They've got another Cuban restaurant I'm going to talk a little bit later about that's more family-owned, etc. But this one, has a delightful interior with all kinds of colorful posters and ceiling fans and red banquettes. And it has a real fiery kind of Cuban vibe. And they've got music and everything, you know, low level. And even the waiters and waitresses have kind of Cuban-looking uniforms on. But it's a nice place to go have Cuban food. It's on Lincoln Road. You can also sit outside if you want to, but inside is quite nice. Cuban sandwiches, black bean soup, you know, meat dishes over rice. You've got those fabulous plantains that I never can get enough of. You've got your custard desserts like the flan, your mojitos, and the whole thing. I mean, it's really, I love this place. I mean, just thinking about it makes me want to go back to Miami and have one of those good Cuban sandwiches with a mojito. Mm. Oh, my God, you got it. I mean, life is great. So that's a real good restaurant. Not super expensive, not inexpensive. The one that's family-owned is a little bit less expensive. But this is nice, and it's on Lincoln Road, etc. The next one is Joe's Stone Crab. Now, this has got to be the most famous restaurant on Miami Beach. It is besides the most famous, the oldest restaurant in Miami Beach, 100 years old.
No way.
The first restaurant on Miami Beach. And I think it's still owned by the same family. Yes. That's amazing, isn't it? It's totally amazing. But their claim to fame is they serve a Florida delicacy, the stone crab. And let me tell you, it is really a delicacy. It is worth going there to eat. And this place is like doing a pilgrimage, too. I mean, this is definitely a must-do when you go to Miami Beach, because the stone crabs are fabulous, and it's just got such a vibe there. And if you don't like crab, they've got fabulous fried chicken. They're known for their fried chicken too, and their key lime pie. The key lime pie is supposed to be the best in Miami Beach too. So it is nothing but bing, 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 win, win, win there. And they have a great like little market that you can buy things, and the vibe is really authentic, and it's a special place. I do have to share one tip though. The main restaurant is closed on Sunday, but they have a takeout section which is next door, which I was there on Sunday, unfortunately, this last time. But you can sit down. They have some tables. They also have a bar. You can get everything that they serve, but you're not going to be served on plates. It'll be in plastic containers. Awesome. And that kind of thing. You know, and you can either take it out and go eat somewhere else to eat it, or you can eat it there. So I have to warn you, because I didn't know that, and I went up and I went, oh, it's closed. No, they said, no, it's not closed, but it's not. You got to do takeout. So just know that. Okay, some of the other favorite restaurants in Miami are, and I'm going to list about five or six of them. The first one is Mango's Tropical Cafe. Now, this is really kind of a Brazilian carnival atmosphere. And you know, Miami Beach and Miami have become a big hub for South American tourism, basically, because of the financial transactions that go on in Miami Beach. The shopping is so good here. It's easy for them to come. And like I said, it's glamour. It's glitz. You can get the best of the best. So there's a lot of South American tourism here. So this restaurant kind of, you know, taps into that. But they usually have what's called a dinner and a show. So you have Caribbean cuisine, and you have a show. But they also have like reggae music, samba, salsa, you know, you can dance and everything. I mean, doesn't that just get you in the mood? Huh. Okay. The next one is a completely different kind of restaurant is La Parada. I think that's how you say it. It's L-A, capital P-E-R-R-A-D-A, de Edgar. Now, this sounds like some French, some English, and some Spanish in this name. But it serves gourmet hot dogs. And I mean, like, super gourmet. And they're famous for what's called the Super Edgar. And it is their specialty. It has cheeses on it, shrimp, crab, potato sticks, and some kind of special magic sauce. Now, it is wildly popular, but I'm sure it's like 3,000 calories. Can you imagine potato sticks on top? Or I don't know how they put it. I mean, yeah. Ooh, you got a whole meal right there. Super Edgar. Okay. Then another hangout is the News Cafe. It's, a lot of people have heard about the News Cafe, but it's basically a coffee shop that's open 24/7 where you can go in, read international periodicals, newspapers, magazines. So there's a lot of international people that go there. After people have partied, they go get some coffee. I think they do actually serve, like, beer. They serve some alcohol there. I don't think it's a lot. But it's really mostly like a cafe where you can get something, a little light bite to eat, specifically desserts and coffee, that kind of thing. Okay, then you've got a place that's in Espanola Way. In Espanola Way, I did forget to talk about this. This is really one little short street that is a pedestrian mall very close to Lincoln Avenue, and it has some boutiques and restaurants on it. They've got typically a market there, too, on Sunday, and that's fun to go to. I probably should have mentioned this in the show. So it's Espanola Way. But this particular restaurant is Tapas y Tintos, and it's Spanish, its whole theme. They're noted for their paella, seafood paella. Paella is like
Okay.
And tapas. They have flamingo dancers there, you know, at certain times. And what they're actually really, really famous for is their gin and tonics. They have over 75 different varieties of this classic drink. Now, I never knew something like that existed.
I didn't either.
Yeah. So if you want, I guess, a hibiscus-infused gin and tonic, you can get it there or something.
Yeah.
You know, but this is something that people really who enjoy gin and tonics, they definitely make a stop there. So that's Tapas y Tintos. Eat gin and tonic. Okay. Then you have Tap Tap, which I would kind of like to go to this restaurant next time I go. It has Haitian food. Now, you know, I know about this restaurant, but I've never been. I thought, what really makes Haitian food good? But they're famous for stewed goat, well, spicy conch ceviche, which is, you know, we all know. If you like ceviche, yum, 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 yum. And then grouper and lime sauce. So, you know, you rarely see like Haitian restaurants. So I guess that's one of the reasons why I really want to go see how it's different from Cuban or other Caribbean type. I'm sure there's some similarities, but I would like to delve into what makes it really Haitian. Okay, a couple of other things I need to mention when it comes to food. First of all, with the restaurants in these best hotels, like in the Fontainebleau, they have several Michael Mina restaurants in the Fontainebleau. Then they have the famous Hakkasan, which it is so, all Hakkasans are so, the food is so fabulously Asian and so sophisticated. I mean, it is really cool. Then the Eden Rock, I think they have the best breakfast in Miami Beach. I mean, it's all organic, locally sourced, fresh. I mean, I went in there to have breakfast, and I didn't want the brunch. I just wanted classic, you know, eggs over medium, bacon, wheat toast, and I think they served me some grits with it or what, and real strong coffee. I thought, oh, this is heaven on earth. I mean, it can't get any better than this. When ingredients are really fresh, especially like a breakfast. Oh,
yummy.
Yeah, it is really yummy. I didn't have to eat until I went to Havana 1857 right before I was leaving. But okay. So you can get some fabulous restaurants in those fabulous hotels. So know that. Now, there are two other options to sample the food that I really do recommend if you like this type of activity and if you have the time, because it gives you a good sampling of all kinds of different foods that people in Miami Beach eat that came out of the culture that, you know, were popular and are still popular. So these are two food tours. And I talk about food tours. I've talked about them in several other episodes. And I love food tours. And they're becoming more and more popular. They're becoming more and more high quality. And they serve a very good purpose. Because if you're there on a limited time and you can't go to a lot of different restaurants, and you don't have enough time to really learn that much about a place, whatever, usually these food tours take you to really good restaurants, a lot of times that you will never know of because, you know, they're not super hyped or anything, but they're very high quality. And then they give you a lot of folklore with everything and how the food relates to the culture and why they like it and, you know, history of this and that and, you know, stories about, you know, how this, you know, tragedy happened. I mean, you just find out all kinds of minutia. And they usually tie it to food, and it makes it fun. It makes it more interesting. So the two that I would recommend, one is called The Taste of South Beach. Mm. It's $49.99, basically $50. Great. 3 hours, you get American food, Cuban food, French food, Haitian food, Italian food, Mediterranean, and Peruvian cuisine. Now, you do the whole universe of what is available and the best in Miami Beach. That is worth it, in my opinion,
oh, yeah.
If you love food, especially for the price. Well, some of the stops are Books and Books Cafe. This is a very famous place. It's got books you can read and really good food. It's a hangout, okay? You start with avocado salsa. Oh, that sounds wonderful. Hummus with tahini and yucca fries. And before I even go into any more, when you go on these food tours, you come starving. Stark raving starving. Because by the fourth stop, you're going to go, I don't know if I can make it to the end. I mean, I'm telling you, I have never taken a food tour that I wasn't stuffed by the fourth stop. So, okay. So you start out at Books and Books. Then you go to Bella Cuba. Now, this is the family-owned restaurant that I was talking about, and I've eaten there. Oh, this is really the real thing. You know, the grandmother cooking in the back. But you get Cuban tamales, egg rolls, plantains, and a mojito, Cuban style. Mm, I bet that is fabulous. The next place is Chalons on the Beach, and you get some ceviche. Andrix Cafe is also a stop where you sample a bombolone. Do you know what a bombolone is?
I do not.
A bombolone is an Italian donut. I have no idea. I've never had one. And then you get that wonderful Italian drip coffee in those fabulous machines. It's probably Illy or even better. Mm. Oh, I mean, that makes me want to go to,
I know,
get on a plane and just go try a bomboloni in that coffee.
You always do this to me with when we talk food.
I know. And I'm not a big eater, but really good food. Oh,
it gets, yeah.
Then they have a place, it's on this, the last stop is the Freeze Ice Cream Factory. Now, this place is so unique because it serves kosher ice cream and sorbets, and it's all made fresh daily with all natural ingredients. Now, all of that plus kosher. Now, that's really unique, y'all. I mean, you know, I think that, I bet that ice cream is just fabulous. So, okay, so that's that one food tour. Then you have the other one that I think is very good is the Miami Beach Food and Art Deco Tour. This is one where you can get Art Deco Tour and food all together for $55.99, basically $56, 3 hours. It really has a lot of the same type of stops that the other tour that I just went into has on it. But, you know, it's five dishes at some of the most popular restaurants in South Beach or Sobe. And I think it's a great value. And if you don't have the time to take the Art Deco tour and go eat at all these restaurants, just take this tour and you'll get a fair smattering of it all.
A twofer.
Yeah, which I think is really good. Okay, so, you know, I have to say again, I love food tours because usually the guides are foodies. They are passionate about the food and they like to, you know, get good reviews. And so you really, it's a fun time. You end up meeting people. And this is another thing. If you're a solo traveler, it is a good venue to meet people safely. Because,
yeah.
You know, foodies are usually pretty harmless. You know, they're just out to enjoy life with food. So food tours.
Very good.
I'll just wrap up everything on this particular podcast. You know, for your next solo trip to Miami Beach, you need to try to carve out some times for non-beach activities. Of course, you're going to be at the beach. Miami Beach really is the American Riviera. It's filled with beautiful beaches, beautiful people, great food, and fabulous nightlife. But you have to really also appreciate it's more than just this glitzy persona. It has a very interesting history and an indigenous culture that really, in my opinion, is well worth exploring. So I hope this podcast has enlightened my listeners, and on their next solo trip to Miami Beach, they will plan some of their activities off the beaten path.
If you're going to be heading over to Miami Beach or anywhere else and you have to pack, we would like to make that a tiny bit easier. Astrid has an amazing packing list. All you have to do is go to astridtravel.com. Right there on the homepage, you can give us your email address and get the packing list right away, because I'm just guessing everybody's going to be throwing everything they've got into a suitcase and getting on over to Miami Beach after hearing from this episode. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, any of the finer places that podcasts can be found. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you in the beach. How come we can't have like a podcast meeting over in Miami? Don't you think we should do that? Miami Beach?
Yeah, maybe we will have an online show from Miami Beach or whatever.
Yeah.
From the fabulous Fountain Blue.
Live from the Fountain Blue, solo travel talk.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. And before we sign off, everybody always tells me you have to ask everybody to subscribe. So I do appreciate anyone who subscribes to Solo Travel Talk, because what it does, it not only is meaningful to me that you got something from the show, but it helps with our statistics, which pushes out the show all over the world. This particular podcast is broadcast internationally, and you know, Miami Beach is such a great destination. I want to make sure the world knows how great it is.
That's right. If you subscribe, it actually presents the show to other potential subscribers, people who want to have information about solo traveling. So thanks. Yes, please subscribe. Thank you for subscribing. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time on Solo Travel Talk.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or her solo travel advisors, visit her website, astridtravel.com.